So we're going to talk about the idea of we're going through the life of Joseph, and there comes a point in his life where things have been going pretty badly. Do you know anybody like that? Don't raise your hand. You know anybody whose life's been going badly? And I don't mean just badly. I mean bad after bad after bad after bad. And now something good happens. It's where we left off. He is made the prime minister. So he has gone from the pit to the top in one fell swoop. How do we act? How do we react? What do we do to the people? How do we feel about the people who were spitting on us and kicking us on the way down? And that makes the only way we can do that is if we go back. If we look through the rear view mirror of life, or the, you know, those side view mirrors, you know, do you have a side view mirror? Ever use it? This is my favorite video from a movie of someone using the side view mirror to see what was coming up on them.
Must go faster.
When you look in the side view mirror of life looking backwards, does it ever look like a T-Rex is getting ready to chomp you? Yeah, does it ever feel like that? Well, maybe it does. And I want to play an extended clip of two people talking. I suspect you know both of these people. Maybe one of them you know better. But I want to talk about Anderson Cooper. Anybody know who Anderson Cooper is? Who is he? CNN, he's a reporter. Remember Gloria Vanderbilt Jeans? This is her son. And I don't know what else you know about him and his life, but he's on CNN, but he also has a podcast. And on this one particular episode, he was interviewing somebody who you might also know, Whoopi Goldberg. Does anybody know her real name? It's Carolyn Johnson. Don't ask me. I mean, there is a reason how she got from that to Whoopi Goldberg. But there's a discussion about a scene in Whoopi Goldberg's life. And I'd like, it's about 4 minutes, so it's a little long. But I ask you to pay attention to not just the questions and not just the answers, but the emotions that come out of this conversation.
She was standing in front of the open door of the closet, shaking, kind of shaking and muttering. And then I came and said, Ma, you know, Ma. And then she kind of just turned around, went over to the stove, turned the gas on, and put her head in it. And I thought, this is bad. So what do I do?
It must have been terrifying.
Well, I think some adult thing in my brain said, you have to speak to her and ask what's happening. You have to ask her clearly. And so this little kid said, Ma, and she pulled her head out and she said, go get Miss Viola, who was our downstairs neighbor.
She pulled her head out of the oven.
She pulled her head out of the oven. And I could smell the gas. So I got Miss Viola. And she called the ambulance. They tied my mother to the gurney, waited for the elevator to come, and off they went. And no one said, oh, and this is what's going on.
When she returned from 2 years being locked up and having electroconvulsive therapy and God knows what else, she had no idea who you were.
No. She said, can I tell you a secret? I said, yeah. She said, I didn't know who you were when they brought me back. I just knew that whatever they said, if they said the sky was orange and I saw it was blue, I was going to say it was orange.
Because she did not want to be sent back there.
Never.
You wrote something that you said, I had no clue that things would change so dramatically for me once they were gone. It's not like either one could have done anything about dying, but from time to time, I feel like, why did y'all leave me here?
Yeah.
I asked that I...
Yeah. Yeah. But the answer to that is because we have stuff we got to get done. That's why. And we're not supposed to. This is not our time. It's not our time. We got kids and grandkids, and they need to know us. They need to know us. That's why. That's my belief. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it happens. It just happens. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that. I find myself asking that question, like, yeah, why did you leave
me? Yeah, why did you leave me? There were three of us.
I also realize when I ask that it's very much, it's the question like the 10-year-old me is asking.
Yeah.
Like, it's like the angry question of a hard-hearted child of like, why did you all leave?
Yeah. Yeah. And... You know, I once flirted with thinking about leaving. And then I thought, what a terrible thing that would be to do to my kid, to knowingly do to my kid, who actually likes me, you know, she's a really good person and a fine woman, and she and her husband have raised three fine, very bizarre children. And why would you do that to them? Why would you leave them with that? So,
yeah.
Decided not to. Yeah.
I'm glad.
Yeah, me too, I think.
I don't know what you thought about Anderson Cooper or Whoopi Goldberg before you saw this clip. Does it change at all your perception of them? To see the pain. I mean, Whoopi talks about her mother attempting suicide in front of her as a kid and directing her to go get Miss Viola. And then you see Anderson Cooper, who is this, you know, he's very well-read, very educated, very bright, articulate guy who's on global television, has a global footprint, who is reduced to tears because the pain that was in Whoopi's life growing up, he could identify with. He could bite on that hook, and it took. And it reduced him. He was speechless. This guy who has talked to everybody in the world on these interviews can't get out a few words, can't formulate the next question, because what Whoopi has gone through has touched a broken part of his life. And it was because they were looking back. Wasn't it? They were looking back at these scenes. Now, we heard what Whoopi was looking back at, but we don't know, unless you've read about Anderson's life, why that grabbed him around the collar and pulled him down emotionally. You see, we look back, just think about what George said. We judge people, right? We look at them. We look through the keyhole of life, and that's what we all have. You know what a keyhole is? What's a keyhole? It's a hole for the key, right? How big is it? Not, and even if you get right up next to a keyhole, how much can you see? Very little. Our view of other people is so restricted. And Jesus says, we don't judge them. And yet, we, in our own past, we have to ask the question, can we get past getting past our own past? You know, I don't know you very well. You don't know me very well. But I suspect there's a couple of us here who have trouble in getting past our pasts. And that those things change, have changed us so dramatically that they continue to change us day after day, moment after moment. And I've got to believe this happened with Joseph. Remember, Joseph is the favored son in this family that makes whatever dysfunctional family you've ever experienced or seen on television look like the Brady Bunch. He's born, remember, his father gave him the coat of many colors to show how privileged he was. And he said, hey, brothers, let me tell you, I had a dream. Not the kind of dream that Martin Luther had, Martin Luther King. No, this is where you're going to get down and bow down to me. And they said, you're a snot-nosed kid. And we're going to get our, we're going to get revenge, right? And they got the revenge, remember? They kidnapped him, threw him into a cistern, an empty well, sold him into slavery. He then gets put into Potiphar's home where the wife accuses him wrongly of trying to molest her and then gets thrown in prison. And he's been in prison now for a long, 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 long time. Have you ever had that part of your life where things were sort of going okay? And then they started going downhill, and they went downhill, and then they went downhill, and guess what happened next? No. They went downhill some more. And Joseph, we talked about a few weeks ago, that there was that moment where Pharaoh lifts him up, and Pharaoh gives him a new office and says, took the signet ring off his finger, dressed him in a robe, and said, now, and put a gold chain around his neck. This is the moment to do what? Get vengeance. This is the time. He's been made the second most powerful person in the country. Pharaoh goes on and says, he had him ride in a chariot, second in command, making people say, make way. And they had to bow down to him as he went through the streets. He's elevated up. Who's going to question what Joseph says or does? Nobody, right? Because Pharaoh says he's in charge. Isn't this the right opportunity to get the sweet revenge we've all been looking for? The sweet, you know, isn't this the time for Joseph to say, to go to Potiphar's wife and say, you accused me wrongly and you know that. And to Potiphar, you had me put in prison. Guess what? It's payback time now, baby. And we all know what payback is. And so he's now the number two guy. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, I am Pharaoh, but without your word, no one lifts a hand or foot in all of Egypt. He's given carte blanche. Are you familiar with that term, carte blanche? Have you ever had gone up with a credit card and tried to pay for something and they said, we're denying your card? You ever have that happen? I once was getting ready for a business trip, and we were living in Arizona, and of all the things that are in a grocery store, right? What can be in a grocery store other than the groceries? People. Clothes, people, get some fruit, right? And they also have these little kiosks or other stores. Here in Lake Wales, you know, you can buy a cover for your phone. You can get your toenails clipped. But you can buy eyeglasses. But in this grocery store in Scottsdale, Arizona, was the airline ticket office. So I went to the airline ticket office to pick up my ticket so I could avoid the, what do you want to do at the airport? Avoid lines, right? Avoid lines. So I went there, I avoided it. And so I went up, I said, here, I'm here to pick up my tickets. And she, a lot of clickety-click. And I'm thinking, what is she doing? What are they doing? And I just, here's the card, here's the thing, pay, pick up the ticket, right? She then, in front of me, holds up the card, brings out a pair of scissors, and cuts it in half. And I said, say what? And she said, your card's denied. I said, that's not denied, that's destroyed. She said, yeah, it's been reported stolen. Nothing like that was going to happen to Joseph. He was never going to have to get the credit limit to his credit card increased. Because he just say, put it on Pharaoh's tab, right? It was going to be paid for, going to be taken care of. And that's where he is. But it gets better. So Pharaoh gave Joseph, I can't believe this. Anybody got a name you don't like? Okay, I do. I don't like Chester. My father was a Chester and he hated his name. And I inherited that genetic material and I hated my name. I hated my name so much that in second grade, you know, you put those little name tags in front of your desk. First day, I put in the name Wally. I won't go into detail. We'll save that for another time. But he goes from Joseph to, anybody want to try that one? Zaphnath-Paneah. Yeah. Can you imagine what happened when Joseph went to his phone to put in his name? Spell check would have kicked it out, right? But not just that. He gave him Asenath, the daughter of Potiphar, the priest, to be his wife. Pharaoh has an arranged marriage. He's got political power. He's got financial power. He's got religious power. He's now married to the right kind of people, the right families. All of this, he's gone from the outhouse to the penthouse. And what do you think? If that were to happen to you or me, what would we do? I know what I would do. Enjoy it, exactly. I'd sit back. I'd want to chill, right? I'd want to chill. But Joseph does the exact opposite. He just doesn't sit around in his office or have people come in and bring him iced tea. He went out throughout the land. He didn't sit on his duff. He didn't sit on his background or whatever. He got to work. He went out. He went and got to work. You see, he could have just said, well, I'm number two in the country and I can live in Pharaoh's palace. But he didn't. He went out. He didn't think he deserved something. You ever feel like you deserve something? You ever feel like you deserve more? I do. And that, I'll tell you, the place where that happens is Disney World. You ever been to Disney World? You've been to Disney World? And have you ever stood in a line? You stood in a line and you wait. Why do those people get to go faster? Why do they get to go to the front? You don't have to worry about that anymore. Disney now has something called the Lightning Lane Premier Pass. For somewhere between $120 a person a day to almost $600 a person a day, almost $500 per person a day, you are guaranteed to go to the front of every line. Isn't that what I deserve? Isn't that what you deserve? Go to the front of the line? For sure, because we're special. But if I was a betting man, I would bet that we really think about ourselves the opposite. We think of ourselves as unworthy. We're so different. It's like this scene where Matthew in The Chosen is explaining how he feels about life.
They're simple ideas for complicated people.
In your obtuse language, here is a circle. It represents everything in the world and all the people that have ever been. And that's me. That's how I feel.
Well said. Good for you.
Maybe that's how you felt. That there's a circle where everyone else, the normal people who are accepted, are in the circle, and you feel outside the circle. Joseph didn't feel that way about being in the circle or being out. He was given a job, and God raised him up, and he got the work. He said, I'm going to start following God day by day. And that didn't just happen. That started in the prison. That started while he was working for, he was working in a house. These becoming instantly godly doesn't happen. It happens day after day after day. It's a process. It's who are we growing towards? During Milton, anybody have any problems with Milton? Anybody lose fences, tree limbs? We'll have a moment of silence. We lost 2 banana trees.
Would you like another one?
No, we got 12 of them. They are propagating. But I did some research on bananas. And how is the banana shaped? Like this, right? No. Bananas don't look like this. No. Bananas are straight. They grow towards the sun. And that's what causes the bend. If you grow a banana, it's just a stick. We've got some of those things. We got the bananas. Because the tree fell down, we didn't have to climb up to harvest the bananas. They're really pretty good, by the way. But they're straight. They haven't had a chance to grow towards the sun. And when you grow towards the sun, it changes the trajectory of your life. It changes the bend of my life, of your life. If you're looking for that power that's going to change you, you've got to grow towards the sun, which means you got to be exposed to the sun. You got to be open towards the sun. You've got to receive the sun, and then you grow towards the sun. Bananas are curved because they grow towards the sun. And God is in the business of bending you and me if we will grow towards his son. That's where the ripening happens. That's where the fruit is. That's where the fruit of the Spirit is. That's where we can take our lives, as broken as they are, and say, I want to grow towards you, God. And you can make something really good out of this. And how do we do that? I'll tell you how we do it. We follow the path that Jesus followed. What did he do? This is Jesus speaking, by the way. The Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve others, and to give his life as a ransom for many. How do we grow towards the Son? We serve. We serve who? Other people, not us. I never understood this as a kid or as an adult. When I would go buy a suit wore a jacket. They make you stand up on that little thing, and there are mirrors all around, right? And what are we supposed to look at? Ourselves, right? How's it look? Is it the right length? I don't think like that. I went on a business trip once, and I know you'll find this hard to believe, I walked out without a sports jacket. So I got the taxi, I said, I need to go here, but I'm looking for a department store near where I'm going. Dropped me off, I walked into the men's department, looked at a jacket and said, that one, and that was it. I didn't really try it on, didn't care with the length. But we're so looking at ourselves, like in that mirror. Is it the right length? What are people going to say? When we serve other people, they'll be overwhelmed with love. And when it comes to serving people and helping people, it's really not about the big things. We think it's got to be big, right? It's got to be big. You know, I want to buy a big present, right? You know, big present. Or, you ever seen a car in the parking, in the drive, in the, with the bow on it? It's got to be big, right? Whatever gift we give, it's got to be big. Remember in the movie Titanic, I'm not going to sing, My Life Goes On. But in movie Titanic, remember Rose? Remember the Clay gave her what? That big diamond, right? The, what was it called? It was called the... It's a fictitious diamond, the heart of the ocean. 50-some carats to impress her. Is that what impressed her? No, she wanted to be loved. You see, we think it's got to be something big. It's got to be this thing that's, you know, it's going to sit on the mantle. But God says the things that are important are really the little things. How do you serve someone? Through the little things. Is anybody watching the latest remake of All Creatures Great and Small? Anybody familiar with the whole show? Well, let me just give you a little background. All Creatures Great and Small was written by Jim Harriet, who was a veterinarian, lived in the country in England. And in this mythical setting, he worked for a guy named Siegfried. And Siegfried was a tyrant. He yelled and screamed at everybody. And he had such great expectations, and he was never wrong. Does this sound like anybody you know? Anyway, Siegfried is this guy in the office. And Mrs. Hall works as the housekeeper. She makes the meals, cleans up. And in this episode, Mrs. Hall's past sort of comes out. Her husband has abandoned her. Her son has abandoned her and wants nothing to do with her life. And the son has said that he maybe, just maybe, will come home for Christmas. And she's all excited that her son is going to come home, that there's going to be this reunion, and they're going to be so happy together. Well, guess what? The son never shows up. And everybody, of course, on Christmas, where do they go? They go to church, right? And here we see Mrs. Hall singing Joy to the World. But she can't hold it together. But watch what Siegfried does.
Repeat the sounding joy.
Siegfried doesn't give her a raise, doesn't give her stock in the company, doesn't even give her a new car. He gives her what she needs most, which is the reassurance that she's loved and cared for, and somebody is going to help her. When it comes to being a servant, this is, to me, a great illustration. Who is it among us that cannot do this? The answer is, we all can do this, right? I don't care what you got in your wallet. I don't care what you got in your 401k or your stocks or anything. Doesn't matter how big or small your house is. This is what we can do. When Jesus was brought, a woman, and it stuns me every time I say these next words, caught in the very act of adultery. Picture that for a moment. If anybody deserves a spiritual smackdown, wouldn't it be her? But what does Jesus do? He bends down and doesn't condemn her. That's something all of us can do. We serve through giving, and we give our hearts. Siegfried gave her not what she needed most. She didn't need a sermon. She didn't need a hymn. She didn't need a poem. She didn't need somebody to send her a book. She needed a friend. And as we approach these next days, and you think about all the big things that are happening in our country and our world, there is no more powerful witness to Jesus Christ or response to his love for us than to show love to another person. You know, we love, Jesus said, how do I love you? How are you supposed to love your neighbor? As yourself. We give ourselves good things. We take care of ourselves. That's how we're supposed to take care of our neighbor. So as we leave here, remember, Jesus not only died for you, which he did, but he died for that neighbor. He died for the neighbor just as much as he died for you. That person who disagrees with you, who has different views than you, who just cut you off or did whatever, Jesus died for them just as much as he died for you and me. That's our response. That's the way God wants us to leave this place and live this week. That's what Joseph did. That's what Jesus did. That's how he paid for us, and that's how he wants us to respond. Would you pray with me? Our Father and our God, I thank you that your loving kindness is just beyond measure. You are filled with goodness. You wanted nothing but the best for us, and so you sent your best. You came personally in Jesus Christ. Thank you for the truth. Thank you that there is forgiveness in you because Jesus paid the price. Let us go from this place and treat people like we want to be treated because you treated us so well. In Jesus' name, amen.